Hi friends, we're launching something very special here at Smart Beauty and I'm so excited to tell you about it. We're looking for a few select beauty entrepreneurs to become our case study clients. And yes, we plan to get you absolutely amazing results that we can both show off. But here's the thing, we're looking for someone very specific. One, you need to be serious about growing and scaling your beauty business. Two, you're struggling to define your brand story and tone of voice. And three, you can keep a secret about what we're working on behind the scenes. If this sounds like you, email hello@smartbeautycreative.com or DM us over on Instagram. Our handle is smartbeautycreative. We're only taking on a handful of clients for this special opportunity and applications close soon. Let's transform your beauty business together.
Hello and welcome to the Smart Beauty Podcast. I'm your host, Viola Levy, beauty journalist and founder of copy-led branding agency, Smart Beauty Creative. We're here to create your brand voice and craft the story behind it.
I'm so pleased to be chatting today with legendary beauty buyer, Louisa Harris. She has worked for some of the biggest names in the industry and is now beauty director at Debenhams. Louisa started out, as many of us in the beauty industry, including myself, with a Saturday job on a beauty counter. Hers was at Boots on the YSL concession while she studied at university. She's since worked her way up to some of the biggest names in beauty retail, from Harvey Nichols to QVC, and then spent 7 transformative years at Cult Beauty, which is where I met her, during the retailer's stratospheric rise. Louisa has been at the forefront of the beauty retail evolution. Heading up beauty at Debenhams, she's working to reinvent the brand as a true beauty destination once more. In our conversation, we dive deep into her career path, the dramatic changes she's witnessed in the industry, from early days when e-commerce was just an afterthought, to today's TikTok-driven beauty landscape. We'll explore what beauty buyers are really looking for, the biggest mistakes brands make when pitching, and why having a compelling founder story matters more than ever. Louisa also shares her personal beauty favourites, from cult classics to exciting new discoveries, and reveals the current gaps she sees in the saturated beauty market. So this is one not to be missed. Let's dive in. Louisa, thank you so much for joining me. It's really lovely to have you on the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
Can you talk about your career journey, first of all, and how you got into beauty buying?
Yeah, of course. So at school, I loved fashion and clothes. I was obsessed. I thought I was going to go off and be a fashion journalist or a fashion stylist. And then when I got to uni, I went to Nottingham Trent. It was quite a stark reality check that perhaps I didn't want to go into fashion, mainly from doing some internships at different retailers, which I will not name. But it was pretty awful, to be honest. So I decided I hate this Devil Wears Prada world. What am I going to do? I'm doing a fashion degree. I thought, oh, do I change and do law? Because I was quite interested in law. Anyway, I got a Saturday job in Boots working on the YSL counter. And I just fell in love with it. I'd always loved makeup as part of, you know, being a girly girl, I guess. But I loved the thrill of kind of hitting my target each day and interacting with customers and doing makeup. Then I moved to Longcom in John Lewis and did a few more out. Like I just had, they had more hours available. Mm. So I worked at the Longcom counter there whilst I was still studying at uni. We did a project actually at uni with L'Oreal and I loved that. And I thought, you know what? I'm not interested in fashion. I still love clothes, but it wasn't resonating with me. And the internships I'd done were just dreadful. So I thought, I'm really going to try and pursue this beauty thing, whatever it is. So when I left uni, I stayed in Nottingham and I got promoted to the business manager for the Longcom counter. And it was all about hitting targets and, you know, interacting with customer, organizing events, thinking outside the box. And I just loved it. So I did that for about a year and I was keen to progress within, you know, the L'Oreal infrastructure. And I couldn't seem to get what I wanted. I couldn't seem to, you know, get taken seriously to move up to head office or do like a regional role. I was still only 21 and like obviously really inexperienced.
Yeah.
So I saw a job that was advertised for Harvey Nichols and it was a buying assistant in the beauty department. And I thought, I've got no idea what that means, but I'm going to go and interview for it. So I did all my research and had to do a maths test, which it's probably not my finest hour, but I managed to pass it. And so I landed this job in London at Harvey Nichols as a buying assistant. And I still didn't really know what it all meant, but I went. And it was, you know, I just loved it. I loved being in the industry. And because I had great product knowledge from working in store and understanding all the brands, I guess I had a bit of a head start. So I just progressed there. And then I moved over to House of Fraser, and my boss at the time moved across and took me with her. And that was an amazing experience because it wasn't uber luxury like Harvey Nichols, sorry, but it was a huge store group at the time. You know, at its time, it was, you know, a really big player in the industry. And I was dealing with everything from launching new brands, launching salons in stores, nail bars, threading bars. I mean, at the time we were even launching those dreadful fish pedicures. I mean, how times have changed.
Oh my God. I actually had one of those pedicures and it's like, yeah.
Disgusting. I couldn't do
so
it.
Gross.
So bad. So it was really an exciting and amazing job. And I was there for a few years and, you know, stepped up to buyer in the end and was kind of part of all the refurbishment projects, Bath and Oxford Street. And it was such an exciting time. We launched Rihanna's first fragrance and we did a PA with her. And, you know, it was an amazing time to be in that world. E-commerce wasn't really a thing then. It was, I mean, it was, but it wasn't as big as it is now. Then I moved across to QVC, which was quite a random move. But again, somebody I know had gone there. My old boss had moved across and she moved me across, and so I was a buyer there for cosmetics, and it was a whole new world. It was a crazy world. We were selling on air. You get measured by the minute how much money you make. It's 24/7. It was really full on. It was an amazing learning experience, and you really learned how to trade. And it was all about finding products that were super demonstrable. So I'd gone from buying Chanel and Dior and these amazing, you know, super prestige brands. And now we were looking at like this random unknown foundation that sold millions because it had an amazing demo. And the presenter was really engaging and really sold to the customers. And so that was an amazing experience. And I learned loads there. And that was when e-commerce really started booming. And we were kind of TV selling, but also online. So it was an amazing kind of multi-channel experience. Then I moved across to this small startup. And it was so funny because when I went there, everyone was really skeptical. They were like, oh, I'm not sure you should go from a big, you know, big company like QVC to this little company. And I was determined. I loved the website. I loved what they were doing. And I loved the brands. And that brand was Cult Beauty. And what an amazing opportunity, because what Cult Beauty managed to do, you know, it really was disruptive in the industry. And I absolutely loved it. So we went to, I was working in this tiny little townhouse in Farringdon. And it was all kind of bit damp downstairs and leaky. It was really not very nice, and there was sort of two toilets in the whole building, so you'd be queuing on the stairs, and it was a bizarre experience. When I first got there, I have to say I was a bit taken aback coming from this zhuzhy office, and
for sure,
but it was an amazing experience. And you know, working with brands like from the very smallest, beautiful, intricate cottage industry brands right up to launching Charlotte Tilbury and some, you know, bringing across the L'Oreal brands. And it was such an amazing experience. And we kind of had this secret sauce that we championed the underground. We were known for being the underground, I guess the underground expert. And you would come to us for true, transparent, honest, expert advice. And obviously that's where I met you. And so, you know, it's also, well, that secret sauce that we kind of managed to show the customer that there was kind of a different way to buy beauty, and everything was written in our own tone of voice. Obviously that was partly you, and everything.
Well, Verity, I think, was sort of like originated.
Verity, OG, yeah.
But it was an amazing time, wasn't it?
It was an amazing time, and everything was so beautifully shot, and it was just an experience to shop on Cult Beauty. So that was an amazing experience. And I was there for 7 years. And then it was obviously sold to THG. So well done, Cult Beauty. What an amazing, you know, an amazing feat to be this tiny, small startup founded by Alexia and Jess, the sell for what it did to THG. So that was, it was an amazing experience. And then lastly, and sorry, I will stop talking soon.
No, go for it.
I met a wonderful woman through a friend, Ed Healy. He's still my friend today, from L'Oreal, who was looking for a buyer. And I met her and we just really clicked. And that was Alex, who's my boss now at Debenhams. And she was looking for somebody to come and head up her beauty team. They were reinventing beauty at Debenhams. And I thought, what an amazing opportunity. I loved the startupness of Cult Beauty. And maybe I could try and do that again at Debenhams. And kind of that's where we are 2 years later. So, yeah, we're trying our very best to reinvent beauty and really grow it on Debenhams and be like a true beauty destination again.
Oh, fantastic. And what do you love most about the job that you do?
I think it's probably two things. Working with an amazing team of people. So I love every day working with my team. And, you know, when you've got good people around you, and it was the same, well, everywhere I've worked, really, that is, you see your work people more than you see your own families, really, don't you? So
yeah,
that's something I love every day, is working with my amazing team. And then I guess it's just being back in the beauty world and devouring product and looking at the gaps that we have and scouring the world for the best beauty brands. And then working with our big brands as well on how we can do things differently and more excitingly and really be different to the other retailers in the market, I guess.
And what would you say is like the biggest challenge or the most challenging aspect of being a beauty buyer?
You can have some really horribly tough conversations. I think that's really hard. You know, we negotiate really hard, and often you get inundated with brands as well that you would love to maybe give a chance to, but they're not quite right. So I think sometimes having those difficult conversations, that's probably the bit like the least, when a brand maybe isn't quite right or isn't quite ready to launch with a retailer, and kind of giving that feedback. Yeah, that can be tricky. And yeah, you can have some very difficult conversations along the way, I guess.
I can imagine. And what would you say are some of the biggest mistakes brands often make when they pitch to you?
That's a good question. I think maybe not understanding their retailer strategy. So obviously every retailer offers something different. And if they're trying to go everywhere, it probably does spark alarm bells a little bit, because what's the point of difference with launching, you know? And if you're trying to launch in a very high-end retailer and in a pharmacy, that doesn't really work strategically. I think also just like the basics, I can't tell you the amount of presentations I've had that have been labeled the wrong retailer. So they're presenting me like another retailer's like deck. And I'm like, oh, that's a basic. Let the retailer make the retailer feel like they are important,
yes,
I guess.
Of course.
Yeah. So I think that those two are the two, probably the basics. And like, I think we see so many brands and the market's so saturated. Having a really clear USP and really communicating that is the key, I think.
So you think sort of a brand story is crucial when it comes to retail?
Definitely, yeah. Having a really well-defined, differentiating brand story. Like, why is it different to every other skincare in the market? Because that's what you buy into. And I think customers are so educated now, they're not gonna be fooled, basically. It needs to be transparent and clear and, you know, and super effective as well.
Definitely. Because I think a lot of brands, they think that getting into a retailer is kind of the end of the rainbow, and then they've made it and they can relax. There is a kind of naivety there, which I'm sure you can sort of talk about, that, you know, once you get into a retailer, a brand still needs to work hard for its money and put a lot of marketing behind it for it to succeed.
For sure. I think it's a true collaboration, isn't it? I think a lot of people see a big retailer like us at Debenhams and think, right, I'll get my brand into Debenhams and, you know, that will be it. And it's the same everywhere I've worked. But actually, we need to work really collaboratively. And we do loads of amazing PR activations and we have amazing influencer relationships. But if the brand itself isn't doing any of that work, also to define the brand within the market, you know, it it's a bit one-sided and it's going to be tougher. So I think having a true collaboration on all marketing, you know, efforts and initiatives is really important.
Because you think some brands, they want to get into big retailers like Debenhams maybe a bit too quickly before they've maybe accumulated the capital that they can really put the marketing spend and maximise that opportunity?
I think yes and no. I think we would never want to turn a brand down if we thought it was just still kind of in its infancy or it's still quite startup-y. We really love to nurture and incubate. And it was the same at Cult Beauty. We were very much the same. We were real incubators. We, you know, we love to champion female-founded brands and, you know, brands that are still very much in their infancy and that maybe we can guide them a bit as well and support them. So, yeah, I think it's a bit of both. I think sometimes brands simply aren't ready because the packaging's not ready or it's not compliant or, you know, black and white things like that. But I think, you know, just because a brand hasn't got loads of investment yet, like, let's look at what we can do together. Can you provide makeup artists for our events? Can you, you know, there's other opportunities, I guess, that we can try and work on together. And we love to champion these small brands that are really have an amazing story.
So as long as they've got a really sort of strong, powerful story, then, you know, there's still a chance that they can kind of aim high at an early stage.
Definitely.
And it's kind of the million-dollar question, but I imagine, like, there are so many brands that are wondering, like, how do I get, you know, in front of somebody like yourself, how do I get your attention to sort of get, you know, get a meeting in? What would you say is the best way of doing that?
Obviously, LinkedIn is a great thing. I speak to lots of people on LinkedIn and I'm very open to receive, you know, whatever on there, really. I think having a really amazing pitch deck is important because that's going to really make the buyer kind of sit up and listen, sending in product for the buyer and the team to trial. But yeah, I think, I guess that's the main thing is just coming, just email me on LinkedIn and then I'll give you my email address and let's go from there. But have a really great pitch deck so that it's really clear and easy for the buyers to see. I think often brands really want to get in front of the buyer first. And I think sometimes buyers are a bit cautious because they don't want to waste everybody's time if they don't even think the product is, you know, right for their retailer. So I think having a great deck that sort of tells you, gives you a bit of background first and then let's meet and see what we can do together.
And a founder story is important to you. Like, do you like hearing about the founder and their own journey?
Definitely. I mean, not all brands have a founder, obviously, but I think that is so key for content and storytelling, isn't it? And I think customers really buy into that. Often founders have created a brand out of their own need, you know, because there wasn't something in the market for them. And I think that's really powerful. And I think, you know, QVC are amazing at doing that. They tell that story and they get that founder in front of the customer, and that is super powerful, that connection. And I guess that's what we try and do at Debenhams as well, through all our content, through all our activations, is really get that founder or that fragrance nose or, you know, whatever it is, in front of the customer so they can really connect.
Yeah, because I think beauty buyers, they want to know who's behind the products that they're buying. They want to have that kind of human connection with a brand, and I think
I think that community piece is really so important these days, isn't it?
Definitely. And very broadly speaking, I know a lot of the time it can be a sort of case by case basis, or you go with kind of, it's a lot of it is intuitive. But do you have a kind of basic criteria when taking a brand on board? I mean, specifically for Debenhams or in sort of in general with the other places that you've worked?
I guess going back to that, like, clear USP.
Yeah.
Have we got a gap? We wouldn't want to bring on a load of brands that all say and do the same thing. What's the uniqueness of the brand? And then, like, really boring things like, can you deliver into our warehouse? You know, can you package the product so that it's compliant? Those kind of really boring tick boxy things. But yeah, I think the main thing for us is having a unique story and the product being a gap for us, or the brand being a gap for us.
Definitely. And how has kind of the industry changed since you very first started? Because I know we were talking before we did about how, like, e-commerce just wasn't a big thing when you were working at sort of House of Fraser, and now it's, you know, obviously, like, the main thing.
Yeah, no, it's crazy how it's changed, to be honest. When I think about my first proper job at Harvey Nichols. We did have online, but we didn't put everything online. Because why would you?
It was more of an afterthought, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like an afterthought. It was crazy. So yeah, I mean, obviously the rise of e-commerce, digital, social has been, exponential. I think there's been a lot of disruptors in the industry as well. We work in luxury beauty, but then you've had brands like The Ordinary that have disrupted skincare.
Yeah.
That have disrupted skincare. And then, the rise of the TikTok brands, things like Made by Mitchell and, Trigwell, they've disrupted people's buying habits. So people aren't just buying, the big corporation brands. They're not just buying, the biggies. I think customers now are really interested in indie brands and viral brands and, what's trending on TikTok and these kind of D2C brands that have launched and been so successful, things like Rode and, Kylie Jenner and when she first launched. And, I think these kind of D2C brands create so much hype because you can't get it from anywhere else. You can only get it from this online, brand's own website. So yeah, I think it's just changed so much. I mean, it's great to see now that stores are really back on the rise. Obviously COVID was such a tricky period for, bricks and mortar, but online absolutely soared. And I think the trends changed as well through COVID. That was another big change. Skincare had its moment again. It came back. People were doing, wellness and skincare and fitness all at home. And the beauty, the big beauty pure players really capitalized on that, I think.
And how's that kind of, how has the sort of boom in e-commerce kind of changed the way that has changed your criteria and changed what you're looking for when it comes to stocking like new brands?
I guess it just means it's a bit easier for new brands, barrier to en- like there's less barrier to entry. You don't have to have capital expenditure to create a shop fit, and I think lots of the even lots of the bricks and mortar stores now are making sure they don't have to have big shop fits. Spend and K do it so beautifully. Sephora as well, where you can be an indie brand and you don't have to pay loads of money for staff and for a shop fit. So I guess, yeah, the barrier for entry is easier for new brands to come online and make it, because you don't have to pay for somebody to go and stand in John Lewis all day and, sell your product. That being said, I think, having stores is still really important in the people still like to trial. I guess for us at Debenhams, we're trying to take that trial piece to online. So basically using AI and technology to help people try things on digitally and to scan their face. We have a number of tools that can diagnose skincare,
amazing.
And hair care, and give, and then throw out products that you need based on your need. So sorry, I probably just really talked around that, but
no, not at all.
Maybe you get the gist.
Yeah, definitely. No, it was very clear. And things like TikTok Shop are obviously, I think, one in two purchases on TikTok is a beauty purchase, and that's changing the game a lot as well. Like, I know that stores like Boots are now taking these kind of TikTok brands and carrying them that they wouldn't, brands that they wouldn't normally stock. Is that the same? Have you noticed that kind of across the board?
Definitely. And brands like Made by Mitchell just absolutely blew up on TikTok, didn't they? And I think that really, I think retailers really sat up and took notice of these brands that are doing so well on TikTok. And it's lovely to see some of the heritage brands coming back and having their moments on TikTok as well. You look at things like Benefit and Benetton went viral again, and it's a massive, massive product for us. So we see the benefit in the sales as well. So yeah, I think it's a really important, social selling is a really important element. I think what's tricky, and all retailers understand this, is you can't really forecast for it. So a product will go viral and you'll sell out really quickly, and then you'll order a huge amount again, and then it might not be so viral. So it's a tricky balance. It's unpredictable. Yeah, I think one of the big things was, and I mean, it's a big brand now, but Dr. Dennis Gross wasn't in the UK before we launched it at Cult Beauty. And they did these amazing peel pads. I'm sure you've tried them. And they were like glycolic and lactic, and they just revolutionized your skin like one swipe. And then they launched the LED mask, and they were kind of the first to do it. So yeah, I feel like there were so many brands that really were like ahead of their time.
Definitely.
And now the rest of the world is catching up on the whole, intersection of beauty and wellness and kind of fitness as well. All of these kind of like things like bed of nails that you would lie on for your back.
Oh, I
Like,
remember that. Yeah, I remember those mats.
yeah, those like
What beauty
massage
for
mats.
yourself.
So yeah, so many cool and quirky brands.
And I imagine you get asked this question a lot. So apologies, but I always find it fascinating. Like, what beauty brands do you personally love and why? Because
Oh God,
being
yeah, that
someone
is.
as discerning as yourself, I imagine that, yeah.
That is really hard. I mean, it does change. Things that I use change all the time. I do try everything. At the moment, I'm really into Murad, which is not a new brand, but I've always really liked it and thought it was super efficacious.
Yeah, the oily skin look like that.
So I'm really into Murad at the moment. I also really love Allies of Skin. Some of their products are just, quite revolutionary. In makeup, I mean, I think I do always go back to MAC. Like, I know it's not a new brand, but they still have a lot of innovation. And, I think their NPD this year is the best I've ever seen. So I can't forget our heritage brand, MAC. They were so ahead of their time in terms of like diversity and inclusion and everything that they do with the Terence Higgins Trust. Gosh, what else? I like fragrance. I'm obsessed with fragrance. So I have a massive, massive collection. At the moment, I'm obsessed with this brand called Véronique Goodbye, and
Oh,
the founder,
I love that
you love
brand.
Véronique, yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, the founder used to work for Vera Wang and Tom Ford and Kilian Lalabo. She was an amazing a French woman living in New York, and she uses all the memories of her growing up in Grasse in France, alongside her Tunisian heritage. So it's gorgeous. And she's got a fragrance called Le Point and it is
Oh,
amazing.
I've got that. It's
Have you
absolutely
got it?
stunning, isn't it? Yeah. I love
Yeah,
how
I know.
kind of racy it is as well. Like, she's sort of
Yeah,
spoken about kind of, yeah,
definitely.
sex
So,
positivity and, yeah, just being
definitely.
like, loud and proud about it. I think it's brilliant.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so I'm really. I mean, my fragrance collection is massive. I know you love fragrance as well,
Yeah,
but
100%.
I still love things like Narciso Rodriguez. That's still one of my favorite brands. I love musky fragrances. Acqua di Parma Colonia. Well, we'll always wear that, I think, for the rest of time.
Classic.
We're just about to launch a brand called AN Other, which is a Miami-based brand, and it's very chic. I think they're architects. But the smells are amazing, and they, I can't remember the name of the one that I love, but it's like ginger, lime. It's like a beautiful, springy, zesty cocktail. So yeah, I mean, just so many brands. Like, I could go on forever. Like, the best concealer I've ever used is Hourglass Vanish Concealer. I always talk about it in everything I do. It, like, literally, it's like you've had Botox under your eyes.
Oh, I
It's
need to try
amazing.
that. I love the
Yeah.
mascara, but I've not tried that concealer,
Try
but
the Vanish concealer, yeah, and
yeah.
then I still use a lot of NARS and some Charlotte Tilbury as well. I mean, I use a bit of everything, really. I tell you one thing I do really love, and I wear it all the time, is Iconic London. They do a blurring foundation, and it really does blur,
Your
and I
skin looks
love
incredible. Can I just say, like, you've got the most amazing
it. Thank
skin. Like,
you. That's very kind of you. Thank you.
yeah.
I've actually got only the Glow Recipe niacinamide drops on today, which are like tinted, at the tinted ones. But yeah, no, I love this Iconic foundation. It's like, I think it's called Smoothing Blur, and it really does blur you. It's amazing.
Oh wow, get on that.
Mean, I could just bore you senseless going on and on about all the products because I do just really love it. But the other thing that I do always go back to is I still really like Jo Malone fragrances as well. Like, I love my one of my favorites is Myrrh and Tonka. I think it's just, yeah, it's
It's
iconic.
gorgeous. I love Pomelo, the part of her new Joe, the Joe
Oh,
Loves. I know she's not part of the original brand anymore, but the Joe Loves range, the Pomelo fragrance is like one of my kind of top five, I'd say.
my mum wears that and it's really gorgeous. Yeah, I really love it. And I do love body products as well, I have to say. Like, I've just tried the new Glossier like body balm, and oh my goodness, that is amazing. I love the Glossier fragrances. I know it's not really aimed at me, but yeah, I love things like Sol de Janeiro Bum Balm. I know it's divisive. People either love it or hate it, but I do really love it.
Scent is just so, like, yeah, mood lifting, isn't it? It's just
Yeah, you don't
pure
need to wear
happiness.
fragrance with it because it's so strong. So yeah, I mean, I could literally bore you for days.
I find this all fascinating. I'm such a beauty nerd. I'm always interested in what beauty buyers have in their, like, bathroom cabinets, because that's just like.
Yeah, I think recently I have gone back to a lot of the heritage brands, you know, things that I've loved in the past. I benefit precisely my brow. I just really love that. And I have been wearing Double Wear again, actually. They've just launched a new concealer, which is amazing. That's really
All
good.
right.
So yeah, I do still really like some of the heritage products. Like I still wear Benefit Bad Girl Bang mascara. I still really love that. Although Swede, if nobody tried Swede, check out Swede because they do a mascara called Cloud Mascara, which is amazing. So I do use that as well.
Wait, is that SWEDE?
Yeah.
I'll check it out because I'm in the market for a new mascara, so I'll
Yeah,
definitely
check
check them
out
out.
Swede. It's really good.
And how does being stocked by a brand like Debenhams really kind of change the game for a smaller brand, aside from just putting their product on the shelves, like in
Yeah,
terms of, like, building reputation and getting their name out there?
I guess so. And you know, we're a very campaign-led business, obviously, because we have such a big fashion arm and a home arm. So every month we're doing a different campaign where, you know, we'll fly off to Mykonos and we'll shoot the summer campaign. So there's always opportunity to get involved in those things. We are, you know, amazing marketeers, and I think we're kind of being quite disruptive in some of the things that we're doing, like lots of in real life activations and chances for brands to get involved, whether it be, you know, providing a makeup artist or coming in to do like mini hand and arm massages or mini facials, or you know, there's lots of opportunity to get in front of the customer that's not just online. We work lots with influencers, so opportunity for, you know, brands to be in the hands of our influencers on our own, like ambassadors, because we work with lots of
Yes.
people across the year for many different things. We do lots of trips away, and we've just been at Coachella. So
Oh,
we went,
incredible.
yeah, it was amazing. We went to Coachella with Bumble and Bumble and Urban Decay. So again, there's just opportunity to be featured in lots of things. So I think it's great for awareness. And obviously, you know, we're a kind of a household name, so I guess people love that. And there's you know, a lot of sentiment around Debenhams as a retailer as well. So yeah, I guess it's great for awareness and getting your customer get sorry, getting your product to the customer. We've got a big customer base.
And Debenhams is primarily associated, I'd say, with kind of masstige beauty products. How has that market changed? And do you think there's more call now for brands that aren't necessarily sort of drugstore cheap and cheerful, but aren't super luxury and premium either?
Yeah, no, I think the way the customer shops now is so different. They could be buying an Allies of Skin moisturizer and a NYX lip pencil. You know, we sell both of those brands, and I think the way the customers shop is very different. People aren't just buying into one brand and one range and one price point. I think they're adding on at checkout that, you know, the Sky High mascara pops up and think, oh yeah, I'm going to try that. I love that. So I think customers really shop, you know, across price points. And I think the rise of TikTok and, you know, some of these pharmacy brands that have gone viral have really helped that as well.
Definitely,
And I
because
guess
everyone.
kind of the rise of dupes as well. And I know nobody really
Yes.
likes to talk about that, but you know, that is a big thing where certain brands do dupe luxury brands and people want to try it. So
For
that doesn't
sure.
necessarily mean they won't go back to, you know, their expensive whatever, but I think people do like to test and trial, and they're really educated now.
For sure, thanks to sort of things like social media and Reddit and this sort
Yeah,
of
definitely.
information out there. And we were talking about this before we started to record, but I was saying to you that I've subscribed. So this is like a non-beauty brand, but I got an email from this meal kit company that I was describing to, and they just got into Selfridges.
Yeah.
And what they said was, right, we're not doing the meal kits anymore because Selfridges wanted this kind of product. So we're now making this product. And they've changed their whole kind of product offering just to
Wow.
sort of cater to this retailer. Do you see that happening a lot? And do you think that's a good idea, in the beauty, from a beauty brand perspective?
I guess We see it in certain ways, probably not quite as directly as that. But for example, brands that have brought out things like body mists to try and get that younger customer, you see it like Kayali, for example, have just launched body mists. Are they trying to cater to their retailers that perhaps don't have the £100 to spend but want to buy into the brand? Maybe. So yeah, I think it's tricky. It's quite brand DNA is really important, isn't it? And I think when you launch a brand, you know what you're there to do. So to change that quite drastically, I think is it's probably a bit risky. But I think brands are really good at diversifying now. So you get like Byoma, for example, which was, it's an amazing brand and it's done amazingly in skincare, and now they've moved into like body care, and perhaps they're trying to reach a new customer. So I think perhaps brands diversifying, great. I think brands changing their whole kind of DNA, we don't really see it. And I think possibly it's a little bit of a risky strategy because your brand is what your brand is, and that's what customers love and buy into and trust.
For sure. But I imagine if you're a small brand in its early infancy and somebody like yourself gives them advice and says, well, I think that you should maybe tweak this, or do you think that's probably a bit of a
Yeah, I think so. I think definitely in the past we've given advice on packaging or, things like that, thing or like logo, things like when brands are really in the early stages, and they have taken that on board. So I think that's fine. But yeah, I guess you make a brand for a reason, and that reason still needs to exist, and that kind of purpose and DNA of the brand is still really important.
Completely agree. And we're almost at the end of our time, but before I let you go, what current gaps do you think there are? I know the beauty market is completely saturated, but do you think that there are kind of certain gaps in the market that current brands aren't addressing that you think there's an opportunity for?
Yeah, I think gaps are quite hard because I think there are so many brands and they're doing so many things. I think the big thing now is like the rise of like the intersection between wellness and mental health and beauty. So I think there's still space there. Lots of people are doing things like nootropics now, which is, really new, but we saw like a few years ago, menopause products suddenly blew up. And I think you just have to be really careful that it's not like a performative product, that it actually genuinely is a product that is going to help this need. So I think that area, although there are gaps around this kind of wellness, mental health, community piece around beauty, I guess you just have to be really careful that you're not trying to create a product to tick a box, that you are, actually satisfying a need and doing something that's genuine and that actually is going to help that gap, I guess. So yeah, I still think there's a lot to come in the wellness arena for sure.
Definitely, particularly women our age, kind of elder millennials, as they like to call it, where we're kind of starting to head into like perimenopause, and there's not that many sort of brands or products that are really sort of addressing it overtly. So maybe that's
I
kind of.
agree. I think that gap is really that kind of older millennial, like who is really serving that customer? And I think that's what we try and do a lot at Debenhams is talk to that like slightly older customer. I mean, we still obviously really talk to the young customer too, but I think we always say that customer is loyal and underserved. So I think there is probably a gap there to really satisfy people that are looking for something. I went to see Celeste Barber the other day at the Palladium, and she's just created a brand. And it's so funny. The way she's marketed it is brilliant. It's a beauty brand. And she stuck a picture of herself when she was like 12, looking like really gawky. And she said, not everyone wants to age
I
backwards.
saw that because I follow her on Instagram. She's bloody hilarious.
It was
She's
genius. So she had created a brand because she said, people of my age are underserved. Like there's nobody serving us the right brand. So she's created this brand called Buoy Beauty, which is all about, everything that she wants as a kind of 40 plus woman. And I thought it was really genius marketing. So interested to see where that goes.
For sure. And lastly, what are you sort of most, what sort of changes in the industry or new kind of innovations are you most excited about at the moment?
Well, I think there's a lot of talk around AI, isn't there? And AI is amazing, and I think it can be used in so many amazing ways. I'll be interested to see how it evolves and changes. When we think back to like before we really had e-commerce and look where we are now, I just can't imagine what that will be in the next few years. I think it's working really well for us at Debenhams with these kind of diagnostic tools and using a photograph to diagnose, skin concerns and areas, of concern. So yeah, I guess I'm really interested to see where that goes. I'm also really interested to see how TikTok evolves, because, like I said, it's so unpredictable. The brands that do really well on it, and how creators are changing. And I think perfume talk is now a massive thing, where all
It
these
is.
sort of 14-year-old boys are wearing Parfum de Marly and all these really expensive luxury fragrances. Like, how will that evolve? I think we saw as well, when this whole tweenager thing came out, that all these young girls were using sort of Drunk Elephant and stuff. Like, I'm interested to see how that changes, and I hope that that changes for the better. And I think Kiehl's were very clever in their marketing when they did all that kind of anti, like, this sand is just to play with, like, not to put on your face as a child. So yeah, I'm interested to see how the brands evolve around AI, around TikTok, and around this kind of tweenagery surgence that has like happened in the last few years.
For sure, because it's like I read something like one in six or something ridiculous, like 11-year-olds has used retinol, which is
Oh,
wild.
it's so dangerous.
For sure. And
So
their skin's still
dangerous.
developing. You just think,
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
I struggle to still use retinol. I do it, but sometimes they're too much for me. And, I just think, goodness. Yeah, it's scary.
Same. Well, Louisa, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been so lovely speaking to you.
Thank you for listening to me rabbiting on.
Not at all.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. All links will be in the show notes, and feel free to visit smartbeautycreative.com or visit us over on Instagram to find out more about what we do. And if you enjoyed listening, please don't forget to rate and review Smart Beauty on iTunes, as it helps people find us. See you next time.